All right, everybody ready for some more? With some Dave Ramsey enthusiasm?
That was better. I almost feel inspired. In fact, I thought that was Dave Ramsey for a minute, Paul. Another white, bald-headed guy with a beard. But you have a credit card, don't you? Couldn't have been him. I discerned some plastic up here. All right, we're going to talk about the second type of culture we're trying to build. Not only a missional culture where we are connected to the worldwide vision, but we also want a professional culture. And what I mean by that is we want here at Every Nation, Victory, Lifebox, Real Life, and whatever else you might do, we expect the organizational excellence of a multinational corporation. We expect that everything we do will be on an international standard. I don't understand why people have the mentality that if it's for church, then halfway is good enough. If it's for ministry, then leftovers are good enough. That, you know, there are things, think about music for a minute. There are people allowed to sing at church that would not be allowed to sing anywhere else. But because it's for the Lord, then we let them do it. It seems like if it's for the Lord, the standard would be higher, not lower. There's artwork that's acceptable in church that's not acceptable anywhere else because the motive was right, but there was no talent. There are people allowed to dance at church that would never make it to the most basic recital. Carlos and Otto are reliving their dance days. Carlos, Otto, RJ, Arnold. Sorry, edit that. Well, my face wasn't on there. More like an aerobics thing. Anyway, you get the picture. But I've always believed that when it has to do with ministry and church, the standard should be higher, not lower. We should give God our best.
That's right.
Let me say this. I really am thankful for the people, for everyone in this room. I don't know all of you, but I think about the people that I work closely with and have for years. Carlos, the work that Carlos and his department do, the excellence level is beyond. There's hardly any church anywhere in the world that does that level. I'd look at the financial excellence, Gigi and her department, and every one of you who are working with finances. And I'm proud of how there's a sinful pride, and I think there's a healthy pride. When I say I'm proud of the way that we handle finances here, starting with Joel Belangdahl, who's now a long-haired worship leader in San Francisco. He was our finance manager for many years. Then Gigi took over from him and took it to the next level. But when I saw him, he took that opportunity. He hasn't had a haircut since he moved to America. And he's leading worship for Neil. But anyway, living his midlife crisis dream. And getting promotion after promotion in his job. He's really a huge part of our church in San Francisco. But I'm really, Gigi and your team, I can't say enough. And I think about Pinky and the HR department. Just across the board, what you guys, you're doing this. And anybody who's coming in new, this is what we want. Now, three words I want to talk about. Three words: money, facilities, and work. And let me talk about facilities for just a moment because that'll be the shortest one. My vision and my, just to let you inside of Steve's brain here for a moment, our our idea has always been, there's not one standard of excellence, but here's what we've tried to do. Wherever our location is, our decision as a ministry has been, we need to fit into that location and be at the highest level of the standard for that area. So in other words, what we had to do in the fort, we had to find what is the level of excellence here, and let's get in the top end of that. Now, when we go to Tarlac, we would not reproduce this in Tarlac. We would go, what is the excellence level of Tarlac, and let's get at the top tier of that. When we go into the Peruvian jungle where I was in December, then we're going to look at what's out there, and let's get at the highest excellence level that makes sense there. Okay, you follow me? We're not going to take this facility and plop it in the Amazon jungle. It doesn't make sense. So excellence is a floating scale that is relevant. You understand? Depending on the surrounding area. It's not let's cookie cut what we have in the fort and just kind of throw that everywhere else. With accounting principles, we want to be the way we do our audits and our financial management, we want to find what is the standard of where we are, and let's be at the top tier of that. That is different in Makati and Bulacan. Okay, that's different. The ethical standards are not different. They're the same everywhere. But the way I think you hear what I'm saying. So we're not trying to say this is how everything needs to be done everywhere. We're going to say let's exegete our culture and our situation, and let's be excellent in that context. Everybody got that? With these facilities right here, I never wanted to build this building. Our church was doing fine, being mobile and not having the headache. I dragged my feet and resisted and fought, and Manny Carlos kept pulling out prophetic words and sticking in my face, are you going to obey these or not? And I'm kind of, not. That was kind of my answer. But the whole team, and then Joe Rosa, without our permission, put in a bid for this property, and knowing it was 99-1 that we would lose, there was no way we were going to get this property. There was no way, but all they can say is no, and they didn't. And then they said, well, we need to see your plans. Of course, we had none because we thought they were going to say no. And so we made up some plans. But God was in it. Now, when we got here and I met with the team, here's what we said. When this building started, when Fulton came in, and we hired a guy who was running malls, and he worked here for a little while, and then when Mylene came in and when Robert was working here, when I sat down, I said, guys, here's the deal. This building, our lobby, our CRs, our everything about this building needs to be at the level of 5-star hotels. Non-negotiable. We're not going to spend hundreds of millions of pesos on a building and then let it look like it's run down. So they said, well, okay, that's going to cost us. I said, okay, that's what it's going to be. That's not negotiable. We're not going to have... Now, is that the standard we're doing in Baguio? No, there's not a 5-star hotel in Baguio. Maybe there's a 2-star, so let's be at that level in Baguio. But I want you to understand our thinking on facilities. And so if we're in Alabang, then we better be at 5-star hotel levels. If we're in the problem, I think you get where I'm saying. Now, I see facilities as tools to get something accomplished, not as monuments or shrines to men or holy places. If we can get the job done in a better way, we are not married to property or facilities. They are merely tools, not icons. And let me talk about money for a minute. Enough on facilities. Well, let me start with work. I'm doing these backwards. This is not really in order here. So work. Let me talk about work for a moment, then we'll end with money. Genesis 2:15. I think we have the scripture on your page for you, Genesis 2:15. The Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. Now, most people, Christian people, do not have a biblical view of work. Genesis 2 in my Bible comes before Genesis 3. Is that the way it is in yours? What happened in Genesis 3? Anybody know? What happened? The fall. I thought you were saying Paul. I thought you were saying ask Paul. Okay. The fall. Okay. Sin happened. What was the result of sin? The curse. Now, where does God tell man that he's in the garden to work? Why was man put in the garden? What does it say? To work. He put man in the garden for what? To work. Everything God did before chapter 3 was a blessing. Work was not part of the curse that resulted from sin. Work was part of the blessing. Working was at the heart of the blessing. He was not, Adam was not told by God, okay, here's the way it's going to be. You're going to have to do this thing called work for a while, but don't worry, one day you get to retire. And so endure this for, 650 years. And then at 650-year mark, you can retire and do nothing. That's not it. That's the curse view of work. Work was part of the call of God. Work was part of the purpose of God. Work was part of the blessing of God. Work was God saying, I've made you for something special. And you know what it is? What is it? Boy, I love the enthusiasm. God made man and he put him in the garden for this special thing called what?
Work.
Work. Yeah. Workers of the world, unite. Boy, that was a Dwight Schrute speech. So work. We've got to see work as a blessing. The biblical view of work is that it is a blessing. It is part of our destiny. It's part of our purpose. It's why we were created. We were not created for leisure. We were created for work. We were not created for days off. That's 1 in 7. Biblically, not 2 in 7. That's 1 in 7. Day off, rest, yes. But we don't just live and endure all this week so we can get Saturday day off and then we go back to the curse of work. No. We have to rest so we can get to work. It's not we have to work so we can get to the weekend. It's work was such a blessing that God was concerned that if man didn't take a day off, he would just keep doing it and just wear himself out. So look, you're going to have to rest one day. Now you're going to have to. It's in the law. You have to rest. Do we really have to? Listen, I went years. I didn't even get the idea of day off until my body broke down. And I was sick and I had a doctor tell me I had to start taking rest. Because I've always loved my job. And attacked it with addictive passion. Workaholic that's not healthy. But you get the point. And I think we all live in a culture that has a wrong view of work. Work is the purpose of God. Work is a blessing. Work is not something that we tortures us and one day we'll not have to do this anymore. God forbid that you get to a place in life where you don't work. Because you will miss your purpose. You will miss why you were created. My wife is a big Anderson Cooper fan. Anybody watch Anderson Cooper? She's a big fan. Reads his books, watches his news. You know what I don't really watch much of that stuff, but you know what I appreciate about that guy? His mother is a gazillionaire. One of the richest people on the planet. He never had to work a day in his life, and yet he works. And he is one of the hardest working people in media. He goes to the places everybody else is afraid to go. The biggest disaster, the worst war, well, he's there. And what, I mean, I'm sure he's paid millions of dollars, but he doesn't need the money. But there's a fulfillment this guy gets out of work. Not because he has to for the money. We've got to get so far beyond the money. You know, but it's the purpose. It's the sense of I'm doing something that God's into. And that's what work is, okay? All right, Colossians 3, 23 and 24. That verse is on here for you. Whatever you do, work. There's that word again. Work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men. Since you know, you have to know this. Listen, you know, some of you don't know this, but since you know, you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. And so you think you're serving Carlos, but it's really the Lord Christ. So every time you look at him as your boss, think of the Lord Christ. If you work for Gigi, think of the Lord Christ. Don't call her that. But that's who you're really working for. Now, don't go idolatrous on us here. But he says, work at it with all your heart, working for the Lord. Why? You've got to know you're getting something way beyond your salary. You're getting an inheritance from God. You've got to know that. If you don't know that, you might resent the extra hours you have to put in sometimes. If you don't know that, you might resent, you know, whatever you're being paid. There's something way beyond what you're being paid. And this is not even addressed to people who are doing ministry work like you are. This is addressed to people who are doing any kind of work if they do it under the Lord. And if they see it in a biblical view of work, which is I'm doing it under the Lord. This is a blessing from God. This is destiny. This is purpose. This is why I'm created. Now, if you're in a department and that you don't feel that's your best calling, that's okay. Do it and let's talk about it. There's been plenty of shuffling here and there of somebody who's trying to be a senior pastor, church planter, and realize that's not what I am, and then they come back and they're working as a discipleship pastor. That's okay. You may not be in exactly the perfect situation now. I mean, Carlos has been a worship leader. Okay, things change. Addo has been a pastor and a campus minister, and it's okay. So you may not be in the perfect slot right now, but just that's all right. You may be for this season. It doesn't mean you're going to do that permanently for the rest of your life. All right, I better get off of this work thing. I'm making some of you tired talking about work. 1 Corinthians 15:10, one thought you need. 1 Corinthians 15:10, it says something like, I've probably got to mix up a King James, New American Standard, and NIV. I don't have it written down, but it'll come out all mixed in there, okay? But 1 Corinthians 15:10, where Paul says, I am what I am. He was quoting Popeye. You know, I am what I am. Where he says, I am what I am by the grace of God. But his grace to me did not prove vain because I worked harder than them all, yet not I, but the grace of God in me. And so here's what Paul says. When he's thinking about working hard, he said, I am what I am by the grace of God. But that doesn't mean I don't work. I worked harder than everyone else. But even that wasn't me. It was the grace of God working in me. And so the starting point was the grace, then hard work, the end was grace. It's not hard work, add a little grace, and then work harder. It's the starting point of what we do is the grace of God. And because we've been given so much grace, then we put everything we have into it. And then when we put everything we have into it, God pours more grace. So it's grace, work, grace, not work, grace, work. It's not, I'm going to go do what I do and ask God to help me. No, no, it starts with God. And then because I'm so blessed to be able to do what God wants me to do, and because I'm so thankful for what He's done in my life, I can do nothing else but pour everything I have into this. And the more I pour in, the more He pours more grace on top of that. So it's grace, hard work, and more grace. But if you feel like your life is hard work, a little grace, and more work, then we need to fix something. Okay? I'm not sure what. Talk to Pastor Paul later. He'll get you sorted out. Okay, we talked about facilities, work. Third word, wow, I need to hurry up here. Third word is money. Let me, instead of giving you a bunch of verses about money, let me tell you a few stories to maybe let you again inside Steve's brain about thinking about money and the way maybe culturally as a ministry we want to think about money. The first thought is this. You have to see that God is our provider. You individually, you as a church, us as a ministry, if you're working in NPD and you're working in process and you're dealing with money in any way, when we would hire people, anybody in the money department or anybody even volunteer, usher, counting money, back in the long time ago, we would not, unless they could pass our faith test, we would kind of give them Kenneth Hagin 101. If they did not have faith, we wouldn't want them counting the money. We wouldn't want them anywhere near it. We didn't want any unbelief coming anywhere near our accounting department. Because, I mean, we were living by complete faith and miracle to be able to keep the lights turned on. So the starting point of view of money is God is my source. Now, I grew up with, and I want you to understand, I'm not trying to, please hear me right. I grew up, my dad was very poor, but he became wealthy. Okay, he's one of those West Texas, you know, we had, you know, son, I had to walk to school across the West Texas desert, barefooted, scorpions, cactus, rattlesnakes, and you know those old stories your granddad's, that's my dad would tell us all that, and how he worked from the time he was a little boy, and callus on his hands, and he created his own business and became, you know, he did well. Okay, and so we grew up in private schools, country club, ski boat, lake house 30 minutes away, lake, horses. We grew up with everything. Okay, all of us, five kids in my family. My first car was a Camaro. Okay, the one that they copy now in the new ones. So when I turned 15, my dad buys me a Camaro. That's how I grew up. So I'm not saying that to brag. I want you to understand. So I grew up with, when Deborah and I got married, I had a car, she had a car, and I had a motorcycle. Three vehicles, two people. Now we come here. Okay, I've always had everything. Okay, all my life growing up. Deborah the same way. Actually, before we came here, when I decided not to go in business with my dad, okay, that's what he wanted me to do. But, you know, he was in the liquor business, where he made all of his money. Marketing director for 28 liquor companies, and it was Merlin Associates, but he wanted it to be Merlin Sons, and so I said, no, I'm called in the ministry. That was, you know, look, when a pastor's son becomes an alcoholic, everybody goes, where did he go wrong? When a guy in a liquor business son becomes a pastor, they're going, where did he go wrong? All of his friends, I was such an embarrassment to the family. It was like, what happened? What happened to this guy? So when I told my dad I was going to the ministry, I can't say the things he said. What a disappointment I was, and what a waste of money paying through college and all this, and just the whole thing. And so he said, you're going to be in the ministry. I'm going to have to fund you the rest of your life now. Because preachers are poor. He said, it's the only job in the world you can do and have a criminal record and not even need an education. You know, you're just throwing your life away, wasting your life, all this stuff. So I said, look, I won't, you watch, God will provide for me. Okay, I'm 20 years old. God will provide. And so here's what happened. I vowed I would never go back and ask him for anything. I'm the only one of the five kids. All my brothers and sisters all but one are very successful. But at some time or another, Dad had to fund them. I never did. Now, I was hungry a lot. So now I'm about to get married, okay? I'm living on, my salary is $100 a week, which, again, you got to think America, okay? Most people graduating with me, they're making $1,000 a week starting out, and I'm making $100. I'm illegal. It's below minimum wage. It's not legal what I'm being paid. Okay, and I don't understand why my parents think I'm crazy. So now I'm getting married, and my roommates are going to move out, who are splitting rent with me. It's the only way I survive. Deborah's going to move in. She's not splitting rent. Okay, I'm paying it all. I had no idea the hidden cost. When I found out what a thing of lipstick cost, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Now, if any of you men know how much lipstick costs, then you're in trouble before you're any single man. Okay, we need to have a talk. I did not know. I had no clue. And so it didn't add up. And now we're engaged. I'm telling my parents, no, I'm paying it all. I'll show you, God will provide. So my dad's, cursing, and yeah, you're going to be a bum, and I'm going to have to bail you out of money. And no, you're not. God's going to provide. So I'm stuck now. I can't go tell him what I need. Here's the moment. I'm sitting in the airport. I'm 2, maybe 3 months away from my wedding, and the bills, the math doesn't work. How am I even going to pay rent on the apartment when my roommates move out? None of it adds up. And I'm starting to panic. I'm leading a church of 30 people. All but two are university students. The offerings are half the time not enough to pay my $100 salary. And so there was this ministry thing in Washington, D.C. And so I'm sitting at the airport in Washington, D.C., waiting on my plane. I'm flying back to where my little church is in Mississippi. And I'm in a panic. This is not going to add up. I'm getting married in 3 months. This is crazy. And then the lady calls my name on the thing. Mr. Murrell. And so I walk up. She says, can I see your boarding pass? I hand it to her. She types in the computer. She scribbles something on it with a pen. Says, okay, go sit down. Okay, sit down. I'm always the last one when they board planes. I spend so much time on planes. I like 5 minutes less. Everybody get on. They're not going to leave me. Just whenever the last person gets on, then I go get on. That's just the way I do it. Okay, I don't like being on planes 5 minutes more than I have to. So anyway, I get on, everybody's on. I walk and my seat is the last one by the CR. So I go all the way down and somebody's in my seat, and I go, sir, that's mine. He pulls up his ticket. No, that's mine. We have the same seat number. And the stewardess comes and says, I'm thinking, I'm not going to sit on his lap. Stewardess comes up and says, looks at me. Oh no, sir, that's not yours. Yours was changed, and it was scribbled in pen. She pulls me up from the outer court into the Holy of Holies. I had been in first class because they make you walk through to torture you to put you back where you really sit. You know, they always make you walk through there where they got peacock fans and they're dropping grapes in your mouth and there's all that stuff, the shine in your shoes. And so he pulls me up there and sits me down. This is your seat, sir. I sat there and thought, wow, I was made for this. I'm sitting there. I have never sat in one of those seats. I've walked through going back by the CR. And it made no sense. The plane wasn't even full. And so I sat there and I heard God. And I just started sobbing right there. And they're trying to give me food and stuff. And I'm having this moment with God. And here's what the Lord said to me, not audibly, but the Lord said, if I can move you from the back of the plane to first class, why don't you think I can help you pay your bills when you get married? Wow. Something changed in my life at that moment. I went from unbelief to belief. I went from dad was a good supplier to God's going to provide for me. Something changed in that moment, and God demonstrated to me, if I can give you things that you don't even need, certainly I can take care of the things you need. Not that I've never had a faith struggle since, but something fundamental. It's like I knew Bible verses, but now I had just experienced above and beyond what you ask or think. And I came off of that plane knowing God's going to do this. This is, we're going to get a bigger wedding cake. And then the next day I woke up to bills. Oh no. Where's that lady with the grapes when I need her? But you know what? We all have to come to a point with money. And this is the point I'm making, where you know God is the source. It's not the offering. It's not the tithers. It's not your salary. It's not your 13th month check, your 14th month check, your 15th month, or if we give you 20 months. It's not that. God is your source. And every one of you have to come. That is the starting point for money. Jehovah Jireh. That word was spoken in Genesis 22 from the top of the mountain. And you know what the mountain was? It was a mountain of sacrifice. God told Abraham, you get your son, you get to the top of the mountain and sacrifice him. That's where he met Jehovah Jireh. That's where Abraham first named God, renamed God. I've known you as God, the this and the healer and all this, but now you are Jehovah Jireh. Why? Because as Abraham was going up the hill, guess what was going up the other side? A ram was coming up the other side. Think about this with provision. Here goes Abraham, up the hill of sacrifice, up the hill of pain, up the hill of obedience. Anybody ever been there? He's going up to sacrifice. What if he had stopped halfway? This is just too much, God's asking of me. The sacrifice is too great. You know what? The provision was still on its way up to the top from the other side. He never found the provision if he had stopped halfway. He had to keep going to that place of sacrifice, the place of obedience, and then when he got to the place of sacrifice and continued to obey, that's where he met the provision. And so sometimes we quit and we camp halfway up the mountain. We halfway obey, we get tired of the sacrifice, we get tired of the pain. It's not fair, why are you making me do this? Nobody else, hey, look, that guy's got five sons, I've only got one. Why are you requiring this of me? We get all that going on, but if we'll keep going through the pain and the confusion and how it doesn't make sense, God's provision will always be there waiting. But it doesn't mean there won't be sacrifice in the process. There's plenty of it. Okay, money. Second thought about God's our source. There has to be sacrifice. I remember in the early days of our church, and some of you have heard me say this, when we were down in that basement on Recto Avenue, and our church was, you know, 150, 180, 200 college students from the provinces. When we would take offerings, they were very heavy. They were heavy because they were all coins, no paper. Every now and then we would get paper in there. It was like, wow, this is, look, 5 peso bill. Yes. But they were coin. We would count those coins to see if June would get paid that week. June was our first staff making, I think it was 1,000 pesos. Was it a month? 1,000 pesos a month. If we had it. Okay, and those coins, but we learned to move in faith. We learned to get on our knees and pray. And I fear this with many of us, that we've gotten used to abundance that I wonder sometimes if God shuts the valve off, so we'll learn how to pray in faith again sometimes. I can remember some of those early days when we stepped out in faith and got our first place in Makati. There was no way the bills added up. But we knew God said, do it. And every week we would cry out to God, we need 10,000 pesos in this offering. We were always one offering away from bankruptcy. Okay? We learned to build our faith muscles. We learned to believe. We learned to pray. We learned to cry. And it was always spiritual for us. That's why I think we, even in times of abundance, we can't get in just a routine of this is just machinery. Lack. Here's my experience in this. There's probably Bible verses I could dig around and find. But listen, I don't find that lack and sacrifice crushes ministries. It builds faith muscles. But I have found that abundance crushes a lot of ministries because we get soft and we stop praying and we stop learning how to believe and we stop learning how to be efficient and how to stretch a peso as far as it can stretch till it snaps. That's what we had to learn to do. And if we don't continue to do that in times of abundance, I think God will shut the abundance off. I thank God for abundance because I don't want just my needs met. I want to have enough to meet other people's needs. We take care of 150 scholars. I wish we could take care of 1,500 scholars right now. I wish we could. Deborah and I support a lot of campus missionaries. I wish we could support twice as many as we support now. So I'm all for abundance, folks, because if I only have enough for me It's hard for me to be a blessing. I want to be a channel of blessing. I want our church to be a channel of blessing. I don't want to pray if we need 50,000 pesos this week in the offering. I don't want to pray for 50. I want to pray for 100 because I want to be able to take get our needs met and help the other guy. Our church, from the very beginning, we've given beyond ourselves. And we don't talk about this much, but I want you guys to understand. We were talking yesterday with our apostolic team. I think we just gave $50,000 to, who was it? The old guy, our friend, Fred, Bishop Fred. There are several guys that anytime they have needs out there, they know they can come to us and we give. Bishop F, when the training, Bishop Fred, these people, I'm glad. I don't resent that they constantly ask us for money. I'm honored by that. This week we'll give Bishop F a significant donation to the Philippine Council for Evangelical Churches, because we feel like if God gives us abundance, it's not just for us to hoard it. We're supposed to be a blessing, a channel of blessing for what God's doing. That's our mentality. Let me talk about integrity for just a moment about finances. And again, when we talk about a professional culture, we want the organizational excellence of a multinational corporation. We want to handle money, facilities, our attitude toward work. We want to handle it not like the sorry store down the street. We want to handle it like a multinational, because that's what we are. We're an international ministry, and what we do reflects on what we're doing around the world. So we cannot have a sorry mentality. We have to have a multinational mentality in the best possible way. I don't mean the, crushing the little guy and all this stuff, multinationals, but as far as the organizational excellence. When it comes to money and integrity, I sat with our auditor. We had a meeting a couple of years ago. I think Gigi was there and our apostolic team. And here's what I did. I looked at him. The accountant who does our audits. He does the audits for CSA and many of the prestigious Catholic schools. And I looked at him and I said, listen, whatever standard you use for accounting principles and doing the audits for all these people you audit, I want you to use a higher standard for us. I want us, the way we do things, the way we operate, our process, our procedures, I want to live at the absolute most stringent standard that you can come up with. I'm not an accountant. I don't know what they are, but that was my demand for him. I said, I don't want any gray area. I don't want any, that's not really the best, but that's okay. I don't want that. And so that was my expectation and my demand, what I was pushing on him. I'll give you one more story about money, and then I'm confusing myself on the time there, that clock. There was a time when we were really struggling financially here, and I remember we had a church in the U-Belt, and we had just moved the Makati Church into Mondragon. Anybody go back to the Mondragon days? How many of you? Okay, four of you, all right. Edwin, you weren't around yet? You were still in elementary school? High school? Okay, Gigi's parents were probably dragging her to church then. That may have been involuntary at that point. But we're at Mondragon. I remember it now. That weird slanted building. And all right, we were there. And for some reason, our offering envelopes had a slot that said building fund. We didn't have a building fund. We didn't have a building. But I think it was just a standard offering envelope churches use. And so it just said, missions, tithe, poor, building fund. And so we had this new person in church, a new believer, who was, pretty wealthy. And I brought a check for 1 million pesos. I had never seen a 1 million peso check in my life. We had seen a couple of 100,000 peso checks, never a 500,000 and never a million. And this person handed me a 1 million peso check and said, Pastor, this person had been saved for about 3 weeks. And said, this is for the building fund. When I saw the check, it was like those cartoons, when the eyeballs come out. You put too many zeros on that. And back then, the peso was about 20 to 1, so that million was a lot more in dollar terms. It was about $50,000. And, boy, there were so many things I could do with that money. But the person said, this is for the building fund. I said, you know what? We don't have a building fund. Yes, you do. It says right here on the offering envelope. I don't know why that's on there, but we do not have a building fund. I gave the check back. I said, I can't take this. Boy, everything in me had a lot of things that needed to be spent, but this person said, I'm giving this money for the building fund. I said, we don't have one, so we can't take that. And we argued. And I wouldn't take it. Person had been at church, I think, 4 weeks in a row. And that was that. I didn't dare tell the staff what I just did. I don't think any of them got paid that month. And the next day, this person shows up at my house with the check. And I've only had a couple of conversations with this person with apparently with a lot of money, walks in, hands me the check and says, God told me to give this money for the building fund. I don't really know about hearing God, but you preach about it. And I've only been doing this, I feel like God told me. So I'm obeying God, laid it on the table and said, if you want to disobey God and not take it, that's your problem. And left. And left the check there on my table. And so I kind of picked it up. We started a building fund and that money sat there for almost 8 years. Was never touched until we bought The Rock. And you know what? That person who gave that million, because it was obvious, I didn't care about the money. I cared more about that person's spiritual walk. The person who gave that million check was the biggest donor for this building right here. We couldn't have done this building without that. But somebody came in and knew that Victory Pastors, they don't care about my money, they care about me. When Joey was making a lot of money, when he was in business, because of his business, the nature of it, he would make these huge amounts, and then it would kind of like this, and then it was these big, when he was making big money, he would write these checks. There were times I went back to Joey and I said, Joey, look, before you give this check, I need to, all right, have you saved? You've got kids who are going to college one day. Have you put aside money for their college? Does Marie know you're giving this much? And as she agreed to it. And I would grill Joey when he would give these scary big checks. And you know what Joey knew and Marie knew? Steve cares more about us than our money. He's not after our money. I never have asked Joey for anything when he was making big money. But he would give and I would go back to him with those checks and say, I'm not taking this until you prove to me that you've done this, this, and this. So I've done that with multiple people who have given big money here. And listen, we have never tried to attract rich people. And most of the people in Victory, 50,000 people who worship with us, most of them are poor. But because we have some high-profile wealthy people who are very generous, people think, oh, that's the rich church. And because we give so much to other ministries, several ministries doing building programs, we've cut checks for 1,000,000 pesos and given to them, sometimes small churches, to help them build their buildings. We have given, we've been generous. So there's a reputation that we're rich. I want to be rich in generosity. I want a reputation of, if you have a need, those guys will help you. I want that reputation. I want to be like that. But as a leader, my attitude has always been, you are more important than your money. And I have tried to give money back, and I've told people, do not write that much money, because you need to give your tithe, and you need to pray about an offering, but you need to take care of your wife, your family, invest in your kids' education. That has been our posture. And I want you to understand that. I don't see people as the source. I see God as the source. And when you see God as the source, then you won't treat people like they're the source. I've offended. Joey and I, maybe we're equal now, offending rich people. There are a lot of rich people who no longer go to our church because we didn't tolerate their sin and we didn't tolerate their attitudes. You can take your checkbook and leave. We don't care because God's our source. If we saw people as our source, then we would pander to rich people. Sometimes I had to get corrected for even being more brutal to rich people, and then I realized that was wrong. I need to treat everybody the same. I just need to offend everybody. But I sometimes had to make a point to myself, look, God's the source, you're not, and we're going to treat you like everybody else. So I don't have an attitude against anybody rich, but it's the same. Okay? So I just want you, I'm just trying to communicate through these stories that this is the attitude about money. Ultimately, the bottom line is God is the source. And we have to see it. That is the starting point and the end point. And there's a lot of sacrifice and a lot of faith in between, but God's the source. Okay? All right, one other thing, and I know we're going over time now, but we have intentionally, our attitude, and I say this, when I used to teach our membership class, I said this up front. We do the best we can within reasonable limits that are helped determined by outside research. We will do the best we can to pay to be the best well-paid church in the country. Now, I don't know if we are right now. We used to be years ago when there were some surveys done. But we make no apologies about doing the best to pay the best we can. Now, we can't just make up what we pay people. I wish we could. But we have to go within. Gigi does a lot of work to compare our size of corporation, not with churches. We compare with churches, but also in the corporate world, in the business world, because we want to have the excellence level of a multinational. So let's look at, with this level of income, this many employees, what does someone in this position get paid? And we try to look at the secular world and the church world. Secular world is always higher, and so we take that as our benchmark and say, if somebody's an accountant handling managing this much money, this is what they're paid in the world, and we're going to try to pay that at the top level of that. That's been our goal. We can't always do that, but that's our heart. Our goal is not to say, this is for the Lord, so why don't you volunteer? That's not our attitude. And there's no apology for that. There are people who don't like that we do that way. They think that if you're working for the Lord, you should basically do it for nothing. I don't believe that's true. We take the passage where Paul writes and says, the workman is worthy of his wages. And then there's the thing about double honor, not a double salary, but you got to take care of them. That's the point. So everybody understand that. So we try to be as professional as possible and not arbitrary and you know, so, but anyway, all right, we've got 4 minutes. Any comments, anybody, before we take another break? So do I draft anybody? Comment, okay. Anybody? Gigi, you are managing all this, these billions of pesos we have. Any comment?
Sorry, I really no comment at this time. I mean, yes, amen. So,
okay.
If that's a comment, yeah.
Can you add anything else?
I have a lot of notes, and I mean, I agree with everything. So, I hope that counts as a comment.
Okay, she agrees with everything. All right, anybody else? Who else does? Who else works in finance department? Who else? Who? Ade, say something. In the mic.
Amen, amen.
We're getting overloads from these finance people. Okay, who else? Jerry, say something.
Okay, amen. No. What I learned is about not quitting. Because I've been to two or three church plants, one with the top, then Alabang, and then Santa Rosa. And one thing I've learned is not to quit believing God for money. It's not only for the church, for personal as well. And I've seen God come through. I put down on my notes that provision will always be there. Your illustration about Abraham doing the sacrifice. It's like the journey of a church, doing the sacrifice, doing all the stuff, and the church is composed of people believing God to come through, and it's like that. I've learned that we should not quit as a people of God.
Good. Excellent. Good. Anybody else in finance department? Thank you, Jerry. Anybody else? Anybody else finance? Okay, Carol, say something. Something you want us all to know.
Yeah, it's always inspiring to know the history, like what you've mentioned about before you were counting the tithes, it's just heavy, the coins. But I also volunteer now in counting the tithes of Green Hills. I'm so blessed, but as you've mentioned, the abundance, we need to be always to be a channel of blessing. So that really hits me, and at the same time, continue to build our muscle faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Gigi reported to the apostolic team yesterday, I think it was in 2010, there was between the Victory congregations that gave to one another, this is not outside, but one of, what was it, 40 million? 45 million. In other words, when there's a need at, where were the bulk of that? Okay, Nova, okay, renovating the mall, getting equipment, then Alabang says, I'll give 5 million, and Pioneer says, I'll give 4 million, and Fort says, I'll give, that's the spirit we've always had of, and this is what's important with the money on a local congregation. It's not mine, it's ours. This is one church and one movement, and all of our pastors, your bosses, I appreciate, they always have a our mentality, not a mine. And we've, whatever church had the need, when U-Belt had need, the other churches rallied and did that. When we needed to rebuild the Harrison Plaza and spend millions doing that, everybody rallied. They didn't say, well, that's your problem, Nixon. We all came together. And right now, Pioneer is about to double their size and get a large facility. We're all going to come together and help that. So anyway, that attitude has got to always be us, not us. It's the big us, not the little us. Okay, and that I appreciate that about all of our leaders that have had that mentality, not a territorial guard my part, but this is all for all of us, within and then without, to the blessed, to the body of Christ. Okay, take a break.
You get an extra minute. We want 1 minute over, so 11:11.
All right, and when we get back, put those questions on the board. When we get back, we're going to jump back into money before the last session. So put those questions. When we get back, we're going to talk about that. Okay?